Good morning again, and greetings in the name of the author of authority. Yesterday we talked about the concept of authority, maybe in the broadest sense, the basis for authority being God's authority. And probably stand here this morning a little more trepidatious about the subject we have this morning because it's a lot more practical and it affects our lives maybe in more specific ways. Just to reiterate, to say again, the basis for authority is God and God's authority. That's the beginning point. That's what gives authority meaning, is because God has ordained it. It all goes back to God, and He holds the ultimate authority. And the result of that is that God has delegated portions of that authority, and some of that He has delegated to people, most of that. And we'll talk a little more about the order of authority today, but we all have authority in our life. Obviously, the ultimate authority of God, but then other people that God has given authority, delegated authority to, that we are under. But it all goes back to God. One example of that would be the Old Testament kings. God chose a king and He vested that king with authority to lead, to be the leader of the people. Could go to the church, the worship side of that picture, and you would have the high priest. You would have the priests, the people who were a layer of authority under God in that. I'd like to begin with here to think about the importance of authority, and I know that authority is a little bit of a bad word in some respects in our minds. It can have a negative connotation, but it is very important to have an authority structure. And we could look at modern history, and there's countries where there's no good structure of authority, and the result is chaos. But I'd like to take you to the book of Judges to look at that as well. And I'm only going to read one verse, but you remember in the book of Judges, Joshua died. The next generation who remembered what God had done and who had it firsthand accounts, they died. And then Israel, the children of Israel, went into this series of up and down, and they would forget God, they would rebel against God, serve idols, and God would allow some other nation to conquer them and rule over them. And after a generation or two, they would cry out to God, God would raise up a leader who would deliver them, and then for another generation or two, they would serve God, and then it was back to apostasy and back into serving idols and being conquered again. So it was just this roller coaster throughout the life of the children of Israel there for a number of years, for several hundred years. I believe the key to that cycle is found in the last verse in the book of Judges. Judges 21 verse 25 says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Eliminate the authority structure, and you get into this cycle where there's no continuity, no stability. And you can see that play out in many other areas of life as well. For those of you who enjoy history, if you go back in North American history, mid-1800s, and you have westward movement, westward migration, settling the West, and it played out differently in Canada and in the U.S. And those from Canada, don't get too excited. There's a lot to be embarrassed about. But in the United States, westward movement, it was settler-driven largely. The settlers would move west, and law and order would kind of follow behind in the big picture. And they would set up the structures of authority afterward. Army would kind of come in behind the settlers, try to clean up the conflicts with the Indians, move the Indians to the reservations. That was kind of the pattern. In Canada, in the Western Canada, the Northwest Mounted Police were established and moved into Western Canada before there was many settlers. And they were moved in there because of the whiskey trade coming up from the U.S., and so they stationed the Mounties there, different spots, and they established law and order. And as the settlers came in following that law and order, there was a much more peaceful process. Now, that's the big picture, and I realize there's a lot of other details. But it was a benefit to have the law and order before and not to try to catch up afterward. Every once in a while, we hear this ideal kind of comes around again, and this ideal that we really don't need authority that much. You know, if people would just police themselves, we really wouldn't need much authority. And there's an idealistic aspect of that that is kind of right. But it doesn't work, and it's been proven over and over. God has set laws, he has set order, and anytime we step outside of that, we have chaos, we have problems. And God has established an order of authority. So the focus here today is on school. Maybe I'll use a whiteboard. What are the pieces of the authority structure in a school, and how would you arrange them? I have a few thoughts, but there's some of these that it's hard to get a very distinct order. So, what would your thoughts be? What would we start with? God. Okay, what's next? Parents? Next? Church? Next? Government? Next? School. Next.
Teachers.
And students. Now, I'm not sure. I would probably change a few of those around a little bit in my mind. I'm not sure if parents belong quite that high up in my mind. I didn't spend just a lot of time analyzing it. I would, in the running of the school, you would have the school board, which would be kind of the authority structure there. But there's an order of authority. And we need to keep that correct. Now, we could say government is kind of it's a little bit of a separate entity. We recognize government. We try to comply with our government regulations in regard to school as much as we can. But it does obviously come under the church. It's probably about right there. Most of you are school board or teachers. There's a lot above you in the structure. Now, as a school board, as a teacher, you're also a part of the church. So there's crossover. But what is your role, and how are you going to respond to the authority structure that's above you? And I was going to say here at the beginning also that this is not balanced. I'm focused on one aspect, which is my response to authorities above me. And there's a whole other level for tomorrow of my responsibility as an authority in other people's lives who are below me. Maybe just a few thoughts yet on authority. We have verse there in Hebrews 13, so this would refer to church authority. Obey them which have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. We have 1 Peter, I believe, 2 Peter talks about submission. I believe it's Ephesians as well, talks about submitting to each other. Philippians 2, verse 3, would have the thought of esteeming others better than ourselves. So again, a little out of context there, but that thought of submission again. Okay, now I would like to look at different kinds of authority. So, others' authority in my life, and there's two different kinds of authority, and these labels are not original with me. I don't remember where I heard them, probably at a teacher's meeting years ago. But moral authority and delegated authority. So, moral authority being the authority of rightness, and we'll look at some examples of that a little more, but then delegated authority being the authority of position. You've been given a position. As a teacher, your position as a teacher is a delegated authority position. Now, you can have delegated authority without having moral authority. And you can have moral authority without having delegated authority. But if you try to use your delegated authority without your moral authority, you're going to have problems. Turn in your Bibles to John chapter 19. John chapter 18 and 19 have impressed me the last while. But I'd like to just look at a couple verses here in chapter 19, verses 10 and 11. So you think of the different authority types that are portrayed here. Then saith Pilate unto him, speaking to Jesus, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have the power to crucify thee, and the power to release thee? Jesus answered, Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. Did Jesus have any authority in this passage? He's a criminal on trial. What is Jesus' authority? He has moral authority. He has the authority of rightness. What does Pilate have? Delegated authority. He has the authority of position. He has been placed by God as the governor of Judea in the Roman Empire. And as such, he has a delegated authority. And Jesus pointed out that even though you have delegated authority, it's been given to you. You don't have moral authority. You have no power except that it's been given you. Turn over to Matthew chapter 23. First four verses. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore whatsoever they bid you, observe. That observe and do. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. What were the scribes and Pharisees? Were they a godly bunch of men? They were corrupt. They were hypocrites. They were everyone's worst nightmare to have over them, really. And Jesus said, they have a delegated authority. They are the keepers of the law. They sit in Moses' seat. They are the ones who are keeping and bringing you the law of God. What they tell you to do, do. But he said, don't act like they do. Okay? They do not have moral authority. They are not acting correctly. You can do what they say to do because they represent God in his law. But do not do the way they do because they do not have moral authority. Mark chapter 1. Contrast, verses 21 to 27. And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day, he, Jesus, entered into the synagogue and taught, and they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God. And Jesus rebuked him, and saying, Hold thy peace, and come out of him. And when the unclean spirit had torn him and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. Jesus had no position here on earth. He had not been... He was a carpenter. He wasn't a scribe. He was not part of the religious elite. He was a common laborer. But when he spoke and when he acted, they said, "This man has authority." He had moral authority. We talked yesterday about being in the proper place of authority. Jesus was in the proper place, and therefore he had moral authority. First Samuel 22. Verses 17 and 18. You remember the story. David is running from Saul, and he goes into the tabernacle, and he tells the priest, "Hey, I need a sword, and I need some food." And the priest there, he said, "Well, sure, whatever. Here's Goliath's sword, here's some bread." And, you know, he's the king's right-hand man. He's the king's son-in-law. I mean, of course you give him what he wants. And Saul found out, and Saul showed up later, and they got all the priests, and he said, "You knew that he was my enemy, and you helped him." And that was the end of the trial. And the verdict was death. And verse 17, "The king said unto the footmen that stood about him, turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. And the king said unto Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned and fell upon the priests and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod." Who's the king? Saul. Delegated authority. Vested with God's authority. Saul stepped outside of that, and he told them to kill God's priests. So you have God's delegated authority nationally commanding that his soldiers kill God's delegated authority on the spiritual side, the church. It's actually amazing to me in a way that Saul's soldiers, his guards, said, "No, we won't do this. You're wrong. We're not going to do this." So he got a Gentile to do it. Moral versus delegated. Saul had the delegated authority. He stepped outside of moral authority. We struggle sometimes with others' authority in our lives. Who is that person to tell me what to do? Or what not to do? You know, when the police officer, you meet him on the road and your eyes automatically go to your speedometer just to make sure, and you think about whether or not your seatbelt's on. You may not like it, but he has the authority. And you don't question that too much. You might fuss about it, but at the end of the day, there's nothing you can do. A There's Romans 13. I mean, how do you get around it? Story someone told me recently. This happened far from here, but there were some 17-year-olds that were driving home from a youth gathering, and they were pulled over by a police officer, and he charged them with going over 100 miles an hour. So they were young. They were, I think, probably potentially losing their license. The person that told me about it knew the situation well, and he said, at least one of the vehicles is governed at 82 miles an hour. You can't go faster than that. So does the police officer, is he wrong? He's been given some authority. He's been vested with some authority. Is he wrong? What should our response be to a situation like that? He can do that. He's been given that authority. Now, is it the right thing for him to do it? Maybe not. I can understand why he does it. But I would feel at that point he has stepped outside his moral authority to charge them that strongly without really having proof. But he's still the delegated authority. He has that authority. Do we recognize that even though that police officer may be overreacting, he may be wrong in the way he's handling it, but he is still a delegated authority that has been placed there? You can think about the story of Samson. Samson spent much of his life using his delegated authority, but he was completely lacking in moral authority. He went out, he killed Philistines, he helped the children of Israel out. How much more could he done if he would have been right in his moral authority, though? If he would have been in his right place under God? Think of the potential for right and for good. So what do we do with that? So we've looked at the delegated, we've looked at moral authority. So we have these different kinds of authority. We have people who use them rightly. We have people who use them wrongly. What do we do with that? Because at the end of the day, our job is to be in our proper place under God's authority. That's our responsibility. Think about the story of Saul and David. Saul was a man that God had delegated authority to. And he was a man who, at the beginning of his term as king, he was a good leader. He was a good king. Until he stepped out from under God's authority. He was a man with an evil spirit. He was a man who consulted witches. He was a man who knew that where he was at was not the right place to be. He recognized that. And he was a man who was afraid of his servant because he knew his servant had in him what he did not. So what did he do? He tried to kill his servant because he was afraid of him. Because Saul knew that if he was in David's position, he would be trying to take the kingdom. And so he wanted to eliminate that threat. In contrast, we have David. We have a man who loved God deeply. He was a man under God's authority. He was a man who knew he was anointed the next king. And yet he ran away. Even though he had been anointed king and he knew he had been anointed, he was willing to wait on God's timing. He was willing to live with what God chose. There's times that God places us under authority that we feel is wrong. And they may be wrong. And as I was preparing for this, I thought about times I've been under people's authority, and I've been pretty sure that they're wrong. And they're misusing their authority. What does God want? God places people in authority. And the authority of those people in our lives is not a matter of debate. It's not a matter of me trying to set the record straight. Did I learn the lessons in brokenness that God had assigned to me when I was in those situations? Or do I become so focused on the pain and on the injustice of it all that I miss completely what God had in mind for my life? If you haven't yet, you will run into authority that you feel is wrong. And we have a choice how we respond to that. Are you going to be a victim? Or are you going to be a victor in the situation? It's a choice we have, and it all happens in here. It's all in our head that this battle plays out. And if we're going to play the victim card, we're going to blame other people for our problem. It's the person who's out of place. This Saul in my life. You know that no one can control you? Unless you let them. We're the only ones that control ourselves, that can control ourselves. When we're playing the victim, you feel like everyone's against you. I'm controlled by other people. I'm controlled by the circumstances around me. I can't do anything about it. I am not responsible. And that is our fleshly response is to say, it's not my fault. I'm not responsible for this. It's this person over here who's causing the problems. But we have a choice, and we can choose to be the victor. And when I choose to be a victor, I have the power and the responsibility to choose my actions and my responses. I can take responsibility for my feelings. I can place myself under other people's authority without placing myself under their control. And I realize we're starting to dice things pretty tight there. But I can place myself, I can choose to place myself under authority without placing myself under control. And I think it's important for us to differentiate that. Even if that authority is out of line, even if it's a delegated authority who does not have moral authority, they're outside of God's authority, it does not need to harm us. We can place ourselves under that authority without harming ourselves. I do not mean this as an excuse for rebellion. There's a difference. The difference is in how we think. And a recognition of God and God's role in our lives and God's authority structure. Being victimized is rarely our choice. But staying a victim is. Again, I do not want to place undue burden on things happen to us, and there's hard things that happen to us. We don't have to stay there. We have a choice whether we stay there or whether we move out of that. And again, like I said, that's a battle in our mind. Part of the problem with being a victim is that we tend to blame. So we're blaming, we do not take responsibility. So we blame other people for what's happening. And as long as we blame other people, then we miss the authority and we miss God's authority structure. Because we're so focused on blaming others. Again, to choose to submit is not to be a robot, it's not to be a puppet, but it's meekness, it's power under control. I'm controlling my mind. I'm controlling my own life. Authority is good. Authority is beneficial. For our lives personally, it's beneficial for a community, the broader group of people. It's healthy. we need to view it rightly. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. He said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing. The last of the human freedoms to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances is to choose one's own way." You have a choice. It's not just the external pressures, but it's what we choose to do with things. One thing I would like to say yet, a couple things. I was talking to Brother Leland Zare here the other day. He was shared at our church, and I was just visiting. I didn't bring this up at all. But it got to the thought of authority and submission, and he just commented that there seems to be a movement, and I would agree with him, but where we've kind of elevated standing up to authority, to call out authority and to tell authority when they're wrong. And we've kind of lifted that up as an ideal. And I have seen in my life, sitting in a men's meeting, and I have seen brethren who called out authority publicly and accused authority publicly. And it's wrong. There's a time to talk to authority. And there's times when authority is wrong, and it may need to be addressed. In 1st or 2nd Timothy, it says to entreat an elder as a father. How do you talk to your dad? You call him out in front of the church? No. You sit down with him and you say, "Dad, I don't understand this." When it's you and him alone. There's right ways to handle things. But I believe in the last number of years, there's been a trend toward. Because of abuse of authority in the past, there's a trend toward disregarding authority. And that's no better. We are called to be under God's authority and under the authority that God has established. And as you move into your classrooms, your school board is made up of people who are very human. And I will almost guarantee that they will all make mistakes. They're still your authority that God has placed there. What I said about being a victor or a victim, that is not a license for rebellion. But it is taking responsibility for our own actions. And choosing to submit to God's order of authority in a right way.